Ours to Protect. Brought to you by Sunshine 106.8. And the IBI is funded by Cumashun na Mban with the television license fee. Check out ourstoprotect.ie for more info.
Good morning, I'm Carol Dooley. You're very welcome to join me now for another edition of Ours to Protect, our new monthly series on climate change and climate action. Later on, we'll be putting the spotlight on climate justice. Eimear Manning from the National Youth Council of Ireland will be joining us. But first, fast fashion. And if you were listening last month, you'll know that Dublin's young people and how they feel about climate change is central to this series. So how do they feel about fast fashion? Here's Sunshine's Jane McNamara.
We all love a good bargain, that feeling of picking up something new to wear. But when it comes to fast fashion, those cheap, quick turnaround pieces we find online or in high street shops have a hidden cost, and it's not financial. More and more, we're learning that fast fashion is linked to pollution, water waste, and poor working conditions, especially in parts of the world that are already vulnerable to the effects of climate change. For Ours to Protect, I spoke with young people about this. What do they know about fast fashion? Do they think about where their clothes come from or how they're made? Here's what they had to say.
Tell me, what is fast fashion?
Like when they make stuff with like child labour and they don't pay people enough.
Do you know what fast fashion is?
No, not really.
I'm like, I have very strong opinions on fast fashion. So like, I haven't bought anything firsthand in like 3 years. Like the last thing that I bought was like a leather jacket from Penneys, which I've used like very constantly since. I just made like a pledge like years ago not to do fast fashion, so.
Is that financial or is it ethical or is it both?
It's kind of both. I mean, I don't have much money because like obviously I'm young, but like, a lot of it would be because it's like the environment and stuff.
I shop in Penneys and Shein, but if I looked into it more, I feel like I wouldn't, because like I'd see all the stuff that would be happening behind the scenes. Child labour and not really working for a lot of money.
And how does that make you feel when you see those things?
It makes me feel bad for supporting it.
What are your thoughts?
Sometimes on Vinted or like give it to my cousins. So I'm not like wasting clothes.
Can you tell me a bit more about Vinted and how that works, and do a lot of younger people use it?
Vinted, it's just like really good because you can sell it for like low prices and you're helping people who can't afford getting it from shops, and it's literally like new clothes because it's just like good quality clothes as well, because you can't like sell it if it's like broken clothes, you know. I think it's starting to get big because I know like lots of people are using it now.
What do you think about fast fashion, or what even is fast fashion for you?
Well, like it's a lot cheaper than all the stuff, and I do buy from it sometimes, yeah. But I'd only buy from it like once or twice a year from like Shein, make an order, and it wouldn't be like that big of an order.
I prefer buying other things that are more sustainable for the environment.
So what other things? Give me an example.
For example, things that are made with recycled plastic bottles.
Well, I have an account on Vinted and I sell clothes and stuff and like buy secondhand clothes in it, but probably it's like all like old clothes. I don't think there's a lot of like new stuff on it.
Do you shop in secondhand shops, or do you kind of share your clothes around or sell them?
Yeah, I borrow a lot of like dresses from my friends going to parties and discos and stuff, and I sell stuff, and then I do like try to buy stuff from secondhand, and I borrow a lot of my sister's clothes.
Not all of the young people I spoke to were worried about fast fashion. Some feel it's just a part of life and their only option when it comes to affordable clothes. But others are asking questions about waste, about fairness, about how something as everyday as clothes could be tied to something as big as climate change.
Sunshine's Jane McNamara. Well, I'm delighted to be joined now by sustainability journalist Joe Linehan to talk more about fast fashion. And Joe, it's a pleasure to have you back in the Sunshine studio, because you were very much a part of our first series of Ours to Protect. And I do recall about 2 years ago talking with you at length about fast fashion and the challenges facing us then. So I guess my first question has to be, since then, have we learned anything? Have we put anything positive into place to tackle this huge issue?
Well, I suppose that's such a dynamic question, and there's lots of different elements to the answer. I suppose to give people a bit of context in case they missed our last chat, you know, fast fashion is a massive problem. The fashion industry is probably the second most polluting in the world after oil. So it's a huge issue, and that's because most of the fashion we wear is made of plastic, it comes from fossil fuels, it doesn't degrade naturally, and there's a lot of labour issues when it comes to fashion, and we consume a lot of it, and then when we're finished with it, because we can't, and it doesn't degrade naturally, we need to do something with it, and we don't really have that many solutions on how to recycle clothing yet. So it's a huge, huge problem. But you know what? There's been some good and some maybe not so good progress. I suppose maybe one of the downsides over the last couple of years has really been the emergence of ultra fast fashion. So people will be familiar with fast fashion, you know, a lot of the high street brands that we would know and consume from. But this new wave of ultra fast fashion refers to brands like Temu and Shein, where you're able to buy multiple items of clothing for less than a tenner. Absolutely. Yeah. And the people who are working in those factories are working in slave labor conditions. The clothing is made from really bad materials. In fact, some studies have shown that it's actually toxic materials that they're made from. So there's a health issue, there's a human rights issue, there's the environmental issue. So that has really emerged. And in Ireland, a lot of people shop with those platforms and maybe they don't even realize how bad they are. So I suppose that's maybe one of the new things that's developed that hasn't been great, but there's been a lot of really positive progress too. In Ireland, I've seen a massive upswing in the likes of public facing figures and influencers talking about rewearing their outfits and how important it is to have a wardrobe that you love and that is timeless and that you'll go back to time and time again. We've also seen really big fast fashion players, particularly Irish ones, like let's say the likes of Primark or Penneys. They have invested massive amounts of money and knowledge and effort into cleaning up their supply chains, offering consumers organic wear at a very affordable price. So that's a really massive change. And we've also seen other fast fashion brands increase their prices to try and deter people from buying multiple items. And they've also gotten rid of free returns. So you'll see the likes of Zara and H&M no longer offer, you know, free returns in the post. You have to either bring it in yourself. And again, that's to maybe help people think twice before they make an impulse purchase. So that's really positive. And then we've seen really exciting things, like our French counterparts just this week announced legislation, the first ever, that is going to tax really heavily fast fashion brands, especially the likes of the super ultra fast fashion brands that I mentioned. So there'll be a heavy tax on items, up to €10 on fast fashion items. So if even if your item costs, you know, €2 in the post, it's going to cost 12 because the tax is going to be on there. They can no longer advertise. And really importantly, in France, they won't be able to use influencer marketing, which is massive. So influencers won't be able to push these fast fashion brands. And that's come out of a really interesting dynamic between France and African countries, because they have cultivated a really healthy relationship. They're trying to improve their relationship. And France is saying, we don't want to fill up all of these cargo ships full of secondhand clothing and ship it off to Africa, which currently is what happens. So it'll be very interesting to see how that legislation plays out, if it's effective, if it does maybe stop people in France from buying ultra fast fashion and fast fashion. And then what would be amazing is if we could adopt it in Ireland. And I would love to see the Irish government be proactive in this and say, hey, maybe we can support consumers, support them in making better choices, and actually punish the people who are causing the problem, which is these big brands. So there's really positive changes. There's some downsides, but I think consumers, even the fact that we're having this conversation, people are interested and they want to know, what can I do? I want to be a better consumer. What do I need to know and how do I make better choices?
Can I bring in here though, Jo, the subject of climate justice, which actually is something we'll be talking about a little later this morning here on Hours to Protect. While it's all great to say, okay, they're going to increase the prices, they're going to make it more difficult for consumers to consume, to buy fast fashion, is there not the danger that while it will bring the big clothing companies to account, the people who actually who can't afford to spend more, these are the ones that are going to be very negatively impacted by this, and that is going to have a knock-on effect for them? So how do you achieve that? Do you know where I'm coming from? How do you achieve that
balance? Completely, Carol. And it's such an important point, because whenever we're having this kind of conversation, it can so easily start to swerve into this area where it's very privileged and we expect everyone to have the same, you know, income and the same circumstances. And that's just so not true. And you're completely right. And there is a danger always with these new things that you forget a segment of society that really relies on these companies. So what I would say to that is, you know, you're still going to have, especially in Ireland, the companies who are on the high street who are very affordable. And if we do take the example of, let's say, someone like Primark or Penneys. I mean, their big thing is that they don't spend anything on marketing. They put all of the cost saving into the clothing. And even now when they're offering a little bit more premium items or organic items, they are super, super affordable. So you're so right. We can't just bring in these sweeping statements and say, well, the consumer must be punished. It's the companies who should be taking the hit, and they need to work hard to make sure that things are affordable for people, but that they can be recycled in the right way, that they're being managed in the right way, and that they're selling people a really good quality too. I think a lot of the time, especially people who are maybe not able to afford the really good items of clothing, they shouldn't have to just buy the really bad quality, you know, the company should be supplying them basic quality, things that will last, things that they can enjoy wearing. So you're so right, there's such a big issue when it comes to it. And I would agree with you, it's the companies who need to pay the price, not the consumer, 100%. And you know, thankfully, there's been really good advances in things like the likes of Depop and Thriftify and Vestiaire Collective. All of these, like, there's been really good secondhand platforms that have popped up that make buying clothes so, so affordable, and they're secondhand. And so many of my friends now say, I'm going to a festival this summer and I bought everything that I needed on Depop. That's a really exciting new era as well.
And it's almost become trendy now, hasn't it, to say, hey, you know, I'm wearing recycling and I, you know, these are all secondhand or whatever, and I'm doing my bit for the environment, and don't I look fabulous at the same time?
It really is. It's like a badge of honour. And I think it takes so much creativity. You know, what's great about those online platforms, I think, is that people can still scroll from their sofa at the end of a long day, or they can log in during the working day. You know, the problem, I think, sometimes around the narrative of going to secondhand shops was a lot of people maybe don't have, you know, the time or the accessibility to head into a shop physically. So these online platforms have been brilliant to bring the secondhand market to people where they are. And you're right, it's such a badge of honour. It's so exciting. And there's always that little good feel-good factor when I turn to someone and I say, oh yeah, this is secondhand. In fact, my bag, I was just out and a lady said to me, I love your bag. And I said, it's secondhand and I love it. So there's that kind of buzz. And it's great that people now don't feel like secondhand is second best. Thankfully in Ireland, we're really moving away from that. And we're like, no, secondhand is really cool, which is great.
Absolutely. And how do you see then the future for the fashion industry? Do you see it that now we are going to, or they're going to go down a particular road, that there's no turning back? And when it comes to the environment and their impact on the environment, the toothpaste is well and truly out of the tube. So they're going to have to comply.
I think so. I think there's so much legislation coming in. Like I mentioned earlier, countries like Africa and China no longer accepting textile waste. Lots of pop-up companies looking for ways to recycle items. Things being designed so that they're easy to recycle at the end of their life. I definitely think there's a lot of momentum around it. But look, the fashion industry is a $1 trillion industry. It employs over 100 million people across the world. It's a huge industry. And with any big ship, it takes a lot of time to turn. But I think, especially now for consumers who are interested, there's so much information out there. You can come really educated. You can make clever choices when it suits you or when it's available. And I would hope over the next 10 years that we'll make massive, massive progress, hopefully.
So finally, your advice to anybody listening who perhaps is a lover of fast fashion for a number of reasons, not least, you know, financial. What would your advice be? Probably maybe think before you buy, because the thing is about fast fashion too, and you alluded to this at the start, that often the quality is pretty dire. So you put it in the washing machine and that's it. You wear it once and you can't wear it again. So you're essentially wasting your money.
Yeah, you can very easily get caught into a cycle by these brands because you buy something, it's not great, then you have to buy another thing and suddenly you have three of them and none of them are in great quality. So totally. What I always say, and it's something that I do myself regularly, is do a stock take. Like, spend an afternoon, go through your wardrobes, go through your drawers and figure out what you have, because a lot of the time when we are racing out to the shop to get something, we have a really similar item, or the item we're actually looking for, but it's buried in our wardrobes. So do a stock take and see what you have. If there are items in there that you genuinely have not worn for a very long time and you can't see yourself wearing them again, donate them to a charity. Vision Ireland, Oxfam, they are all crying out for clothing because they can actually reuse it, repurpose it, put it back into the community. So do a clear out, figure out what you have. And then obviously, if you need to buy items of clothing, or if that's the treat that you want, go for it. But what I would always say is just ask yourself, you know, you work really hard for the money you have. Is this an item that works with the rest of your wardrobe? Is it a piece that you're going to get multiple wears out of? And what I would really say, the big thing is, you know, it's so hard when we go into a shop, you're so overstimulated. There are so many things that can catch your eye. Just take a breath and take a minute and say, okay, do I actually want this? Do I actually need this in my wardrobe? I think we've all got caught into that impulse buying thing. And I think especially now with our phones, you know, you'll get emails saying there's a 20% off sale. You'll get push notifications. Unsubscribe. Like, go through your email. The next time you get an email like that saying bye, 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 unsubscribe from it. Because a lot of it is, if you don't see it, you don't think about it. So just make it a little bit easier for yourself. Take away the overstimulation and also be gentle with yourself. You know, you're not going to change overnight, nor should you. Another thing that I always say is great is, I remember at the start when I was trying to kind of pull myself away from the fast fashion buying, I set up a little kitty, and every time I felt the urge to buy something, whatever that was worth, I put into that little kitty. And at the end of the month, I remember one month I had over 100 euro and I was like, oh my God, okay, now I'm going to go and get a facial.
Nice.
Yes. So maybe sometimes just helping yourself see the habits, but really small changes. And I think even this conversation, just by listening to this conversation, maybe you'll think twice next time, or you'll maybe follow some accounts that might give you some more information. But yeah, start small and keep the faith.
Great advice, great advice. Jolene Hinn, sustainability journalist, a pleasure to have you back with us. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk.
Thank you, Carol.
If you just joined us, I'm Carol Dooley, and this is Ours to Protect, our monthly series on climate change and climate action. Up next, we'll be putting the spotlight on climate justice, and we'll be talking with Eimear Manning from the National Youth Council of Ireland.
Ours to Protect, brought to you by Sunshine 106.8, and the IBI is funded by Cumashun na Mban with the television licence fee. Check out ourstoprotect.ie for more info.
I'm Carol Dooley. Thanks for joining me this morning. Very shortly, we'll be speaking with Eimear Manning from the National Youth Council of Ireland to talk about the work that they do specifically in relation to climate justice. But first, what do local young people think about climate justice? Do they really understand what it's all about? Here's Sunshine's Jane McNamara.
When you ask young people about climate change, you get all sorts of responses. Some are fired up and informed. Others say they don't know enough, but it's on their radar. For some, it's a big issue, but it can feel far away from everyday life. I asked these young people what they think about climate justice and climate activism. What is it? Do they believe in protesting? Here's what they told me.
When you're like protesting, you have to do it like, you have to do it like respectfully and just obviously like make yourself aware, but like do it respectfully. You can't be like damaging other things, because like I think if like people saw that you're protesting respectfully, they'll probably like, you know, like agree with your decision more. But if they see you like putting paint on paintings and stuff and ruining other people's work, they won't want to like cooperate with you.
What do you think about climate activism, climate justice? Is it on your radar as a young person?
I think we don't really learn about it enough in school, and I feel like if we learned about it more, it would be more like an important thing in our life. But I like do care about it. Like I think it is important to like save the future generations.
My family's very like environmentally friendly. I used to be like really into like animals and stuff, and I used to like try to use no plastic and everything, but like as I've gotten older, it's become less of an issue, because I have, as a teenager, I have like a lot of other stuff going on, like school and everything, so it's harder to like find time to actually think or even do anything about it. We don't really have time to like protest or anything.
Like if they're on the road, then they block the traffic and it's not really doing much. There's like other ways they could say it than having a protest on the street.
I definitely like advocate for more protesting, because like a lot of people seem to do the small things, like not much when it's compared to like the massive carbon footprint of like billionaires and stuff. So like the main thing would just be bringing more attention to politicians and stuff, and to like people that are really making that big difference and really burning all those fossil fuels and using all that plastic, rather than the small things where we like feel like we're making a difference, but it's really just like a drop in the bucket compared to everything else.
What do you think?
Probably not enough is being done, maybe by also older generations, because it doesn't really concern them maybe as much as it does us. So I think that like maybe younger people should spread more awareness to the older generations maybe as well, and to be more taught about in schools.
I think it needs to be done, but maybe not in a way like some people do it. Like less aggressive and less like violence like happening in the protests.
I have a few friends who go protesting every now and then to do stuff to better the environment and stuff like that. It's important to make sure to try and reduce pollution, I guess.
Some of the young people I spoke to were engaged, others weren't, and plenty were somewhere in between. But the conversations are certainly happening. Every month as part of this series, I'll be getting views from Dublin's youth on the issues that concern them with regard to climate change and climate action.
Sunshine's Jane McNamara. Well, here to tell us more about climate justice is Eimear Manning, the Youth and Climate Justice Development Officer at the National Youth Council of Ireland. Eimear, thank you for taking the time to join us this morning. Before we talk about climate justice, can you give us an overview of the National Youth Council and what it is that the organisation actually does?
We actually do quite a lot. So we're what we call an umbrella organisation. So basically, if you can imagine an open umbrella, the Youth Council is that umbrella, and all voluntary youth organisations sit under us if they choose to become members of us. And then if they are members, then they get certain benefits. So for example, we would all collate our voice together to form a discussion around policy. So say, for example, the government says we're going to open a consultation with people around something that could potentially impact youth, then we will all use our collective voice, but it will come through the National Youth Council that we can do the work on formulating our response to that consultation. But then we also do our own funding for youth organisations. We do capacity building, training, we create resources for youth workers. So a lot of supports, I suppose, happen for youth workers.
And when we say youth, are we talking about young adults up to, say, what, 16, 17, 18? Or?
Great question, because it's really confusing, actually. So in Ireland, we typically think of youth, if we're not in that youth work space, as somebody under 18. But actually, if we're talking about the kind of governmental level of Ireland, it's anybody between 15 and 29.
I didn't know that.
And at European, it's 15 to 30. And internationally, it goes all the way up to 35. So technically, I'm still a young person internationally, but not in Ireland. So
that's fascinating.
Yeah,
actually.
Very interesting.
Yeah. And the work you do then, you're the Youth and Climate Justice Development Officer.
So I have two main jobs, and then I have kind of a lot of other little bits that I would do in between, such as public speaking like this to media and or at conferences. But my main two projects that I work on is, number one, the Future Generations Climate Justice Project, funded by the Department of Education and Youth. It's what we call youth-led. So that means that the young people who are interested in climate or climate justice, they come up with the idea of what they want to work on for that funding call. So the funding call lasts about a year. And each year we sit around a table with young people from different youth organisations and we have a discussion saying, what area of climate justice is interesting you this year? So just to give you a brief overview of what climate justice is, it is essentially looking at historically who emitted what in the past, how is that currently affecting people today, particularly those who are most vulnerable, and then going forward in the future when we're coming up with all of these climate solutions, how can we make sure that vulnerable people aren't going to be negatively affected by those solutions? So essentially, it's protecting the most vulnerable people while we protect a vulnerable planet. So for young people in particular, they have certain vulnerabilities that we might not necessarily think of, and we might not understand necessarily how those vulnerabilities interact with the climate, but a lot of the times they do. For example, we work with young people who are very rurally isolated, and they would feel like the political scape in Ireland is very Dublin-centric. And because it's so Dublin-centric, they feel like their voices aren't heard when it comes to climate. So this project, by kind of sub-funding, will enable those young people to then partake in a project where all of their transport and things like that is covered, to come up to Dublin and have their voices heard at political levels or in a political kind of scape. So it just does different things depending on what the young people that we work with each year would like to do. I mean, if you look at it, the entire climate justice movement in Ireland really is spearheaded by youth. The young people were kind of at the core of it in terms of organising those protests that we had before COVID back in 2018, all the way up to most of the grassroots organisations now that we have that are specifically climate organisations. So climate in general is a huge priority for young people.
Mm. Eimear, you just mentioned protests there. Can we talk a little more about that? Because there have been some protests which some people might argue have been a bit extreme, blockades, defacing art. And the question is, have these protests actually caused more harm than good? Have they been counterproductive?
Yes, so this is something that technically their approach is actually working, because you're talking about it and that's what they wanted. Like, we might look on the outside and say that's very extreme, the way that they're trying to protest the climate. Like, one of the most common ones that we see now is a UK-based climate organisation called Just Stop Oil. And they were the ones that you might have seen on the news were like throwing paint or mashed potatoes at famous paintings. And a lot of people are annoyed at those groups for doing that. But the thing is, we have to look at the history of activism to really understand why this is happening. Because the history of activism in terms of climate has been quiet. And while those protests are always like peaceful protests where we kind of march to the Dáil or march to wherever and try and have our voices heard that way, it's very evident that they're not working. You have to sit back and think, okay, if they are getting this loud and trying to be this bold, where they know they are going to be criticised, then really we have to start looking at the extreme issues that we're having to cause such an extreme response. And if those young people felt listened to and felt that the government were doing enough, then they wouldn't feel the need to do that.
Does it not, though, run the risk that nobody will listen to them because they will say, these young people, they're out there on their own planet, so to speak. There's no talking to them anyway because they've just decided this is the way we're going to behave and we don't care what the impact of that is on other people. Is that a potential problem?
Absolutely, it's a potential risk. But what I would say is there's two things in that. The first one is that a lot of these young people who are running those kinds kind of protest that we would consider to be a little bit out there. Every single time that they do one of those big media stunt protests, they get so many more members joining them. But then the other one is that on the flip side, you were talking about the fact that, you know, nobody will listen to them. They'll all stop listening to them. That's how they feel about the government. So they feel like they have to raise their voices to an extreme level to be able to be heard. It's still peaceful. It's just a little bit more, I suppose, out there.
Can we talk a little bit about the soft law, the Council of Europe creating a soft law on youth and climate action? Eimear, what's that all about?
Yeah, so I was contacted back in 2023 by a member of the Council of Europe's Youth Division, and they said that the government of Iceland wanted to put together a recommendation, is the word that they use, which is a soft law. And a soft law means that technically it is not legally binding for that country to adopt this law, but that it is strongly recommended by the Council of Europe that they do. And they wanted to focus on the topic of young people and climate action. This was pretty historic because it was the first time ever that any sort of high-level government really wanted to focus on the linkage between young people and climate action. And they said, we want to create this soft law to publish in the Council of Europe if it's adopted by the Council of Ministers, and then all Council of Europe member states and countries will be recommended to sign up to this and to ratify it. In October 2024, it was finally approved by the Council of Ministers. But what's outlined in that soft law is we were seeing this really, really disproportionate response to peaceful climate activists in terms of the law. So a lot of them were being arrested, a lot of them were being detained. So the Council of Europe wanted to make a recommendation that essentially preventing governments or law enforcement from withholding those young people from being able to have their free speech and their rights.
Yeah.
So we came in and we created that recommendation. It covers a lot of different things as well, including green jobs and skills and appropriate training for not only youth workers, but also for law enforcement and also for the judicial system. And it was, as I said, adopted in October 2024. And now we're trying to get all the member states to ratify it, including Ireland. And we have been told they are going through the internal processes of trying to see if they can ratify it, but we don't know. And I forgot to say this earlier, but the other area of work that I work in the National Youth Council is we have what's called a Climate Youth Delegate. So this is the Department of Environment, Climate and Communications. They fund this programme, and it's every year we interview and then elect one young person to represent Ireland at COP, so the Conference of Parties, the big climate conference that the UN hosts every year. And that young person goes around the country of Ireland and facilitates a ton of different consultations with young people from different backgrounds, trying to find out, what do you want me to bring to COP on behalf of your voice in terms of climate? So it just makes sure
that's
quite
the responsibility, isn't it?
Yes, it's a huge responsibility. And like this year, so we have two climate youth delegates at the moment. One's about to end their term in September, one just started their term. Beth Doherty, who was actually involved in suing the Irish government in a climate case back in 2022, and she's about to end her term. And just entering, we have Fatima Ismail, who is only 19 years old and is a staunch climate activist and humanitarian rights activist.
These are the people of the future.
Exactly.
They?
And I'm hoping we'll be the politicians of the future as
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. Now, other things that you do at the council, particularly in your areas, you do offer workshops as well for young people, don't you?
Yes, young people and youth workers. So we have a multitude of different workshops that we can offer and different supports we can offer. So I know that I'm the climate kind of hub of that, but we also have workshops in things like health, everything from mental health and well-being to sexual health to child safeguarding and protection. And then we also have like young people in terms of employment and jobs and arts, like young people involved in artivism. You know, how do you be an artist but also an activist through your art? Mm. And we also have global youth work, which is that's actually the team that I work on, is the global youth work team. It's about how do we take youth work and the work that we do with young people and make them feel like a global citizen, part of the wider world, and what they can do can impact the entire
Absolutely,
world.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then climate falls under that, which is my workshops. So I would do an introduction to climate change, and then we also obviously do the introduction to climate justice. And then I do a very interesting workshop called Planetary Health, which is all about how healthy the world is in terms of our atmosphere, our water, you know, our soil, how that can directly impact on the health of humans, the physical health and the mental health. So if you go to our website, it's just youth.ie. We've broken everything down by program. And then we also have a separate page for resources. So we have loads of free downloadable resources in terms of videos and publications that you can download too.
And this is for anybody. You don't literally have to be part of a youth group.
Correct. Yeah. Anybody can access it. Yeah.
Absolutely incredible work you do. It's been a real education for me talking to you this morning. Eimear Manning, Youth and Climate Justice Development Officer with the National Youth Council of Ireland. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
And that wraps up this month's Hours to Protect. I'm Carol Dooley. Thank you to our guests this morning. Thank you for listening. And a reminder, if you would like to find out more about the Hours to Protect initiative or indeed listen back to some of our previous episodes that you may have missed, just go to our website, sunshineradio.ie.
Hours to Protect, brought to you by Sunshine 106.8, and the IBI is funded by Cumashun na Mban with the television license fee. Check out hourstoprotect.ie for more info.